Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Think, Believe, and Manifest Show with author, master trainer, and certified dream coach, Constance Arnold. Join us every week as we bring you life-changing information that will empower your life. And here's Constance.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. And I am Constance Arnold, your host for the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show. And, of course, you know that I am coming to you live with lots of love and just a little touch of Southern flavor from beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. Well, I want to thank all of you for joining me from all over the world, from Iraq, from Australia, from Europe, and, of course, my faithful listeners in the U.S. And my declaration over your life today is that the best is yet to come. And you know you have to believe that, don't you? I also want to thank all of you for making the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show one of the most popular shows on Blog Talk Radio. Well, it is a beautiful day here in Atlanta, Georgia. It is springtime. The trees are blooming. The flowers are blossoming. And it is absolutely spectacular. And I just love seeing the splendor of God during this wonderful time of the season here in Atlanta. Well, how are you doing today? Are you beginning to experience those miraculous manifestations in your life? I know that you are from all of the emails that I am receiving from you, and I'm very grateful for that. Well, I'm doing really great today, and like I said earlier, it makes me feel really wonderful that you are beginning to get a clear understanding of universal laws, spirituality, and you're taking small baby steps to daily implement those principles into your life. Well, I am so excited about today's show, so we're just going to get right into it. Today, my very, very special guest is Mr. Jack Canfield. Of course, you know Jack Canfield is affectionately known as America's number one success coach. He has studied and reported on what makes successful people different. He is the co-author and the founder of the New York Times best book-selling series, the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, which has sold over 1 million books. He also holds the Guinness Book World Record for having 7 books simultaneously on the New York Times bestsellers list. And, of course, all of you know that he was a featured guest and one of the contributing authors in the runaway hit movie, The Secret. We all remember that, don't we? He is the CEO of the Chicken Soup for the Soul Enterprise, a billion-dollar empire. He has been featured on so many radio and television programs, which include Oprah, Larry King, Fox News, and many more. He is currently conducting his Success Principles workshops throughout the U.S., where participants will learn how to discover the 64 world's most powerful principles guaranteed to give you everything you want in your life. I am just so excited about today's show, and so we're going to go ahead and get started. Jack Canfield, welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
My pleasure to be with you, Constance.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm really great.
Good. Well, let's just go. You're calling from California, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Santa Barbara.
Okay, I'm in Atlanta. Let's get started. Jack, you are obviously one of the most successful, influential, and powerful people in the universe. However, I've heard you share that your childhood included an environment where there was alcoholism and workaholism. How did those experiences impact and help to form your life?
Well, you know, I think my mother being an alcoholic and being drunk a lot, and my dad rarely home because he worked all the time, I think the positive part of it was that it made me very self-reliant. I had to rely on myself because there was no one else that could take care of me. Probably the negative part was that for a lot of years I didn't really own my emotions because it wasn't safe to share those in my family. So I had to do a lot of therapy and just tons of workshops. But that was good, too. It led me to a full understanding of the human potential, which is what I what I do these days is, you know, make a living at helping people break through their limiting beliefs, their limiting childhood experiences, their repressed emotions, and to live more abundant and fulfilling lives.
So you really seem to be in touch with the needs of people. Do you believe that that came from your experience as a child? You're so, even though you're very successful, you're so warm and compassionate, and you really just have a passion to empower people to live the life of their dreams. Do you think that that came from your childhood, your ability to really be in touch with the needs of people?
I do. I do. I think that I have a lot of empathy and understanding for where most people come from. I remember a therapist once saying he's not met anyone that didn't come from a dysfunctional family, still looking for the perfect family, haven't found it yet. And, you know, whether it was people were alcoholics or workaholics, whether they were just repressed in terms of their own emotions or, you know, so achievement-oriented that they ignored their children, so afraid that they were, you know, not able to go out of the world and take risks, whatever it might be, I think we all need to be focusing on our healing. And for me, you know, I do think I am compassionate and empathic. I think it's part of my nature as well. I, you know, came into this world very sensitive and really aware of everyone. And even as a kid, I was a leader. I started organizing kids into groups and building things and starting gangs and, you know, not illegal gangs, but just gangs of kids to hang out together.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I ended up going... I had a very rich aunt who kind of saved me when I was about sixth or seventh grade. She adopted me and took me under her wing and helped me get educated, sent me to a private school in town. And as a result of that, I was lucky. You know, I grew up in West Virginia, which at that time was before we had Alaska and Hawaii. It was 48 states, and I think we were the 48th worst education system in America. So I got the opportunity to go to a school with really good teachers and ended up as a going to Harvard, and I often say I made the top half of the class possible by being in the bottom half, but
oh.
But nevertheless, I got a great education and started meeting people with names like Larry Rockefeller and John Hopkins III and, you know, just people like that. So I was fortunate, you know, and I attracted into my life, I think, my uncle was wealthy, and I spent time at their house, and that was the beginning of that opposite reality of saying, "Wow, these people are wealthy. They're rich. They're traveling around the world." I remember my aunt went on a round the world cruise and came back with all these carved ivory things and stuff from Africa, and it was like a revelation to me that that was possible. So mm-hmm. I started wanting that. You know, what we talk about contrast, which says this is possible. And so I was fortunate to be exposed to a lot of really great people early on and get the kind of education. What was fascinating, I was majoring in Chinese history, thinking I was going into the State Department. And my senior year at Harvard, I took a elective class in psychology. And I went, oh, my God, I love this. This is really fun.
Uh-huh.
So that's how I got into this work was through psychology and through teaching high school for a number of years, where I began to realize that my students, who were all black in the south side of Chicago, weren't that motivated. And I realized that motivation became my key interest, more than teaching history, was why aren't these kids wanting more? Why don't they believe it's possible? So I hooked up with a guy named W. Clement Stone and learned about how to motivate kids to achieve more, and you know, eventually became a teacher trainer and then a trainer, and here I am today.
Right. Well, you just mentioned W. Clement Stone, and you met him in Chicago. What role did he play in changing your life? He was your mentor. Is that right? And if so, do you believe that all of us need mentors?
He was definitely the person who re-vectored my life. I mean, even though I'd gone to Harvard, I still felt like I was less than other people because I had come from a poor family and not, you know, here I was surrounded by people that were very wealthy and very accomplished. And so when I met W. Clement Stone in Chicago, he took me under his wing. He was worth $600 million at that time. Mm-hmm. He had started with a $100 investment and started an insurance company. And literally, you know, it was rocking the world. He was best friends with Napoleon Hill, people like that. So he took me under his wing and taught me about responsibility, taught me about really the law of attraction. He didn't call it that at the time. He just called it positive thinking. And But he was what we called an inverse paranoid. He literally believed that the world was plotting to do him good, and he always just expected the best. And little by little, I began to get that attitude of believing anything's possible, do it now, take action, expect, visualize, affirm, doing all of those things. And he was a big visualizer and taught me a lot. So it was really the beginning of my career as a self-help facilitator.
Do you believe that God called you to really help, empower, and motivate people? And if so, do you believe that he placed people like W. Clement Stone in your life to really educate you so that you could go out and really be a powerful influence in people's lives?
Well, I do. I think that, you know, my destiny, if you will, my purpose was clearly to do this kind of work. And, so I think that the way I believe the law of attraction works is that when you have a desire, and that desire may in fact come from a seed that's planted in you before you're even born. Lots of research now. I read a wonderful book a number of years ago called Life Before Life by this wonderful psychologist in Chicago. Her name was Helen Wambach, and she hypnotized over 2,000 people in groups and then had them fill out questionnaires about their experience of being hypnotized, and she would take them back through hypnotic age regression to before they were born. And every one of them had a memory of choosing to be born, choosing what gender to be, choosing what race to be, choosing whether or not they had handicaps or not, because there were lessons they needed to learn and development that they needed to have. And so I believe that, I chose to be born a male, chose to be born into the family I was born into. See, all these people that say, well, I didn't ask to be born, when they say that to their parents, yes, you did. And you asked to be born to the parents you had because there were certain lessons you needed to learn, whether it was to learn patience or perseverance or courage, loyalty, whatever it might be, to develop these qualities. So I think that when we are born, then we have these desires that form from this purpose we have, and that when we have those desires and they go out into the universe, the universe, God, source energy, however you want to frame that, responds. And so I had many, many mentors like W. Clement Stone come into my life. Now I had to take action when those opportunities presented themselves. So you can't be passive. You do have to act in response to the things that show up in your life through the law of attraction. So, yeah, I think that partially you're guided by people of higher consciousness,
right.
Angels, perhaps, when before you're born, you get to choose, and they guide you. It's like you're in a class, and you get to choose. And then when you're on Earth, you're supported by. Just in the last few years, I've become a big believer in guardian angels.
So am I.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Have you had any experience that you would like to share with our listeners about where you believe that there was an event or a situation where you were sort of guided by your guardian angels?
You know, it seems to me that they've been there all the time and always helping me make the right decision. I rarely feel like I've made a decision that wasn't perfect. Mm. And, the people, the person I married, the school I went to, the first job I took, I've even been protected. I mean, there's three times I should have been dead, driving a car, falling asleep at the wheel on the way to Florida when I was in graduate school. And I hit one of those little metal things on the side of the road that tells you the mile marker.
I know what that is. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they have a little diamond on the top with the number. And I hit one of those after I'd fallen asleep. And when I woke up, I literally was, maybe 100 feet from a bridge abutment. I would have been so dead. There are times that I've taken a turn to the right instead of the left. That would have taken me into a gang situation where I would have probably been killed in South Central L.A., and so I've had a number of experiences like that where something speaks to me. When we were doing the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, we had, hundreds of stories submitted by people where my favorite one was this guy was walking across a bridge in a ghetto side of town because his car broke down, and there were about five guys walking toward him with tire irons and all clubs and things like that, and all of a sudden they stopped and ran. And later, I think it was 2 days later, he interacted with someone who had witnessed this, and he said, yeah, I saw him run. There was this huge man standing behind you. He looked like he was 7 feet tall, and it seemed like he had wings, but I don't really believe he did, but that's what I saw. And, so here was this angel that had showed up and protected him in this very terrible situation. And we used to get story after story submitted to us like that. So, after several years of that, I began to really believe there were these angels, and then I began to actually communicate with them on purpose. Whereas before, I wasn't so sure they were there. I didn't take the time to do that. But now I'll literally invoke my guardian angels. And when I do a workshop, I'll literally prepare the room as a sacred space by asking Archangels Gabriel and Michael and Uriel and Raphael to take the four points of north, south, east, west in the room, and we surround the room with golden light and then cobalt blue light and then a pyramid of purple light and white light, which may sound very woo-woo, but as soon as we started doing that, all the people in our groups started accelerating their growth. It was almost like I didn't have to do anything anymore. People were just having these spontaneous releases of old memories, of negative beliefs, and so I'm a big believer now.
Well, I believe in that also, Jack, and that's miraculous. And speaking of miraculous, let's talk about Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Mm-hmm.
I just love reading your books. They just give me such a warm, glowy, gooey feeling of hope. And let's talk about the success of the book, but share with our listeners the story behind your success for Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Well, basically, there were a number of things that happened, and again, we could probably say this was guided, and I believe it was destined to happen, and
mm-hmm.
I was destined to do it. I was out giving talks, like the Success Principles workshops that we're on the road doing now. We've got one in Boston coming up on May 1st, and what happens was I was doing these talks and running seminars for corporations and school systems and public seminars, and people would come up after the talk and say, you know that story about the puppy? Is that in the book anywhere? No, it needs to be. Why is that? My daughter needs to read it. And a day later, someone would say, that story about the little Girl Scout who sold 3,225 cookies, boxes of cookies in 1 year. My daughter needs to read that. Is that in the book anywhere? I'd say, no. And so it was like God was knocking on my head saying, Jack, you got to put these stories in a book.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I was flying home from Boston and back to Los Angeles where I lived at the time. And I said, I'll write down all the stories I know, the Bobsey story and the Roger Crawford story and the Tony Robbins story and so forth. And I had over 70 stories. And so I thought, gee, I ought to put these in the book. So I made a commitment to write one story every 3.5 days, so 2 stories a week. So by the end of a year, I would have 101 stories. And so I started to do that. And then I met Mark and Mark Victor Hansen, and he had some more stories. And we decided 100 was a better number than 73. And so we worked together, and this book came out. Now, what most people don't know is that how the title came to be. We didn't have a title, and so we said, we'll ask God for a title.
Hmm.
So we closed our eyes, and he did it at his house, and I did it at my house. For 1 week, every morning, we'd meditate. Mark's kind of hyperactive, so he would just go in and go, best-selling title, best-selling title, best-selling title. Waiting for something to come. I'm a little more mellow, so I would just go in and say, okay, God, I'm now receptive to receiving a title for this book. And then I would sit in a contemplative, receptive state. And it was on the third day, I remember it was Wednesday morning, and I saw this hand come out and started to write on one of those green chalkboards you have in school,
mm-hmm.
and it just wrote the word chicken soup. And I remember saying to the hand, what the heck does chicken soup have to do with this book? And the hand said, well, what happens is when you were a kid, every time you were sick, your grandmother gave you chicken soup. And I said, but this is not a book about sick people. And the voice that was running the hand said, people's spirits are sick. They're living in resignation and fear and hopelessness. And so I went, oh, chicken soup for the spirit, chicken soup for people's souls. And then I got goosebumps. And so I stopped meditating. I called Mark. He got goosebumps, chicken soup for the soul. And then I told my wife. She got goosebumps. Told my agent. He got goosebumps. We went to New York, met with 21 publishers over 3 days. Nobody got goosebumps. And they just thought it was a dumb title. They said, people don't read books of short stories, and we don't think you guys are well-known enough to have a platform to sell it. And anyway, nobody bought the book, and our agent finally gave us the book back and said, I can't sell this book. So we went to the Book Expo America, which is where all the publishers and bookstore owners have their convention, and walked from booth to booth for 3 days in Anaheim, California, going, will you publish our book? Would you publish our book? And it was late on the third day, after lots of rejections, that this little publisher in Florida said, well, we'll read it. And they called us back a week later and said, we'd love to publish it. But it took us 18 months to find a publisher. And once the book did come out, it took 14 months for that book to become a bestseller. Uh-huh. And if you want, we can talk about some principles we applied to take that book from obscurity.
I would love to hear that. Let's talk about that. What was it in you that made you persistent and made you not want to give it? Because so many people, after maybe three or four rejections, they just say, well, this is too much for me. What could you share with our listeners? What was it in you that just made you persevere no matter what?
Well, number one, I felt like it was a divinely inspired project. You know, I did feel like the angels were helping, if you will. And so I just didn't want to give up. And I think when we were, one of the stories we had in that first book was about this little Girl Scout who had sold 3,000, I think it was 125 boxes of cookies. Her name was Marquita Andrews. And one of the things she taught was SW, which stands for some will, some won't, so what, someone's waiting. And there was another quote I'd read by a woman who had written the Poisonwood Bible, a wonderful novelist. And she said, if someone rejects your book, it doesn't mean your book is bad. It simply means the editor who will love your book does not live at this address. And I thought that was really a good piece of information. So I just knew that this had to get out there because I was giving talks, and so was Mark, and people loved these stories. And so I thought the editors in New York were kind of like all literary and hotty-totty and so forth. You know, mm-hmm. They weren't really in touch with the people in Middle America. And we would have eventually self-published the book if we'd had to, and sometimes I kind of wish we had. I'd be a lot more wealthy because when you write a book, the wholesale cost of our book was about $6.95, and Mark and I made $1.20, and the publisher made $5. So, he has a jet. I don't. But the point is this, that I think once you're captured by a vision and you know that you're supposed to do it, which I did, and you apply the law of attraction through positive expectation, not giving up, visualizing that it's going to go and be sold. We used to keep visualizing things like the book. We would visualize whole bookstore windows just filled with our book, like piled up, 1,000 books. We would visualize the number one position on the New York Times list. And so we just kept doing that. And it took a while. I think we were being tested. How committed were we? But once it happened, we started to apply something I teach called the Rule of Five, which says every day you do 5 specific action steps to move your vision forward, to move your goal forward. And, we didn't hit a bestseller list for 14 months. The book came out in 93 in July, and it wasn't until September of 94. So there was a lot of rejection and a lot of patience that had to be exercised. But that book, which nobody wanted, went on to sell 10 million copies just in the United States and is now translated into 47 languages and has spawned a book series with 225 titles and total sales around the world of over 125 million books.
Are you amazed at that?
I'd like to say I am, but I'm not. And I'll tell you why. We intended to really rock the world. Mark and I both had this intention that we wanted to make a huge difference and reach at least 1/5 of the world's population, which would be 1 billion people. So we have this goal called our 2020 vision that we would reach 1 billion people with our books and our audio tapes and our speaking and our television shows by the year 2020. So now it's 2010, and we've sold, as I said, 125 million books. We just had a contract, Constance, where in China, a little publishing company called Anhui Publishing, I shouldn't say they're little, they actually have 5 acres of printing presses, but they have bought all the titles, and they are now publishing every book in Chinese, every book in English, and every book in Chinese on one page and English on the other, and they're going to use the books to teach English to kids in school in China, and they think they'll sell 500 million books, that's 500 million books, by the year 2020. So we're more than halfway there.
You have to feel great. How do you feel when you know that you're really empowering and changing people's lives?
Well, you'd have to have a surgeon take the smile off my face. I wake up really happy and I sleep really well.
I can tell. Well, if you're just joining me, I'm Constance Arland. I'm talking with Jack Canfield, best-selling author and America's number one success coach. Okay, Jack, you were one of the featured guests in the runaway hit movie, The Secret, and we just love you in that movie. How can we begin to apply The Secret techniques in our lives. You talk about creating effortlessly. What does that look like?
Well, basically, you know, I think, you know, the three principles in The Secret were ask, believe, and receive. And so you have to be clear what you want. And I think that's in my, you know, success principles workshop that we do, the one-day workshop we've been doing around the country. What we do is we help people first clarify their purpose. What are you here for? And I believe everyone has a purpose, and there's a very simple technique that I teach in the seminar that helps people identify that. And so if you know what your purpose is, then the things that you want and the goals that you set will be aligned with the essence of who you really are. So my life purpose is to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision in a context of love and joy. So hopefully the chicken soup stories inspire the techniques that I teach in my book, The Success Principles, and we teach in our workshops, empower people to then live their highest vision, not what someone else wants for them, but their highest vision in a context of love and joy. So when we're doing that, I find, at least for myself, that I'm very, very happy. So the first thing after you get clarified with your purpose is to decide, what do you want? And most people have never really sat down and said, this is what I want, your ideal life. In other words, if you could have a genie show up and come out of a bottle and say, okay, I'm going to grant you every wish you want, and you didn't have to work for a living unless you wanted to, you know, what would you do to make a difference in the world? What kind of relationships would you want? How much money would you want to have in the bank? What's your cash flow? What's your income level, et cetera? What kind of house would you live in, et cetera? And so we go through these seven areas of your vision, and then what happens is we turn that into specific goals, you know, how much by when. So a lot of people say, I want a big house on the ocean. Well, the universe can't respond to that because it doesn't know which ocean. It doesn't know what you mean by big. For some person living in, you know, a little ghetto in Africa, big might be, you know, 1,500 square feet. But to someone who grew up in Beverly Hills, big might mean 10,000 square feet. So you have to be very, very specific about what you want. And then if you have this preference and desires and your goals and you've stated those, then you move into the believe part where you just expect to get it. And that's when you can start using things like visualization and affirmations to heighten the sense of feeling of having these, which moves you into the receive stage where you're now working on forgiveness. So you're in a state of being to receive what we call a vibrational match for that which you want. So if I want to be wealthy, I have to start acting like a wealthy person. I have to start feeling wealthy, feeling abundant. I mean, if you live in America and you make $100,000 a year, you're in the top one-tenth of 1% of all income levels in the world. People living in America, even in the middle class, are living better than the kings lived in the 14th century in Europe. You've got air conditioning and heat. You have radio and television. You have healthier food. Your houses are insulated. And we can go down the list. So you start focusing on and being grateful for what you have, more things will show up in your life to be grateful for. So if you practice gratitude, abundance, and the forgiveness, and then do something you love every day so you're in a state of joy, then you're now creating a vibrational match that will help you receive that which you've actually ordered through the cosmic ordering system by setting goals and having a vision.
Right. You talk a lot about visualization, and obviously you've used it a lot in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tips that you can share with our listeners about visualization?
Absolutely. I think the main thing with visualization is you need to get very relaxed, and you can do that by meditating, stretching, doing yoga, sitting in a hot tub, exercising, lots of ways to get your body into a relaxed state. Deep breathing is another great technique. And once you're in a relaxed state, then what you want to do is close your eyes and realize that only about 20% of us are what we call eidetic visualizers, where you close your eyes and you see things in 3D, metric, you know, golden mare movie kind of stereo super scope visualization. Most people don't see that. We close our eyes, and when we're visualizing, we're kind of imagining, but it's not like a clear movie inside. And so a lot of people think they're not visualizing when they don't do that. If you do visualize eidetically, that's great, but don't feel upset if it's more like a just thinking or an auditory kind of experience for yourself. Because auditory people will focus more on the sounds of what something will sound like, and kinesthetic people will focus more on what it feels like, and the visual people will actually see the pictures. But what you can do is you can create external pictures by cutting out pictures in a magazine. You can go to Google Images and find an image of anything you want on the computer, print that out, put it in a binder, put it up on a collage on your door. My whole door, if I leave my office, the back of my door, which is a flat door, is covered from top to bottom with pictures of things I want. I also have a goal book where I cut out pictures and put them in these plastic sleeves that are in a three-ring binder. And I go through that on a regular basis. And then I have my vision board also in my bedroom with pictures on it of things I want to accomplish, places I want to go, things I want to own, etc. So then if I look at that and then close my eyes, I can then recreate that picture much more easily, let's say, than if I have to make it up out of nothing. And then when you're visualizing, what you want to do is hear the sounds, see the sights, think the thoughts that you would think, and feel the feelings. This is the part that most people miss. Mm. It's what a lot of people call nevelizing the vision, because there was this guy named Neville who really made the point clearly that you have to feel the feelings you'd feel if you already had that which you're visualizing. It's the feeling more than anything that really produces the result. It's kind of what turbocharges it out into the universe. It also locks it into the unconscious mind, and that does several things that are really important. Number one, it opens up this part of your brain called the reticular activating system. See, right now, Constance, you and your listeners are not aware of what you're feeling in your left foot. But as soon as I say left foot, you become aware of what you're feeling in your left foot.
That's true.
Exactly. So all of those feelings were streaming up your body into your brain, but your brain was ignoring it. It was like a filter. It's filtering it out because it's not important. But once you start visualizing that which you want, not only are you sending out an email through what I call the internet to the whole world about please bring this to me, but you are also programming the reticular system in your brain, this filter, that will now allow you to see everything in your environment that will help you achieve your goal. We've all had the experience of buying a new car, and the next day we see 55 of that brand of car driving around the road. And what happens is that we had this experience of the new car and focusing on it so strongly that now we're seeing all those cars that were always there, but they were background. So as I talked about in the movie The Secret, when I set a goal to make $100,000 and visualized it every day, once that reticular system was programmed, I started waking up with creative ideas about how to do it. I started seeing resources in my life, like my grandmother's bathroom where there was a Reader's Digest that contained a solution to my problem of ultimately selling 400,000 books so I could then make $100,000 income. Anyway, this reticular system gets reprogrammed and now allows all these resources in. Have you ever been at a party, Constance, where let's say you were thinking about maybe going to Hawaii on a vacation and you're talking to somebody, and across the room someone will say the word Hawaii, and you hear them. It's almost like the C's part.
Right, I've had that experience.
Exactly. So when I start focusing on something I want, my receptor sites, if you will, in my brain are programmed now to pull in anything that will support me in achieving that goal. Mothers will have this experience where you can sleep through a fire alarm. There could be a car crash outside your house. You would sleep right through it. But if your baby went, you'd wake right up because you're programmed to let that sound in because your baby is a priority. Whereas you know your house is not burning down, so you just, the fire engine goes by and you don't even hear it.
Well, you know, that's so interesting, Jack. I want to share with you this story. Mm-hmm. You don't know this, but you're on my vision board. And I guess about a year ago, people asked me, who would be the one person that you would want to interview? And I said, Jack Canfield. Of course, I called your office several times. They said, he's not available. So I just sort of put it down back in my spirit and sort of prayed about it. And this Sunday, I'm interviewing Bernie Dorman. And so I just happened to call his PR person just to finalize the details. And I said to the young lady, I said, okay, I'm going to interview Bernie on Sunday. I said, do you have anybody else, maybe a law of attraction person or a person who could talk about success principles? She said, let me think about that, Constance. And she called me back, and I was driving in Atlanta on the expressway. She said, would you be interested in interviewing Jack Canfield? And I said, what did you say? And, of course, I screamed all the way around 285 in Atlanta because in my heart and in my spirit, I didn't know how, but I knew that one day that I would.
Well, there you go.
And so a here prime example.
Exactly. You know, there are so many things that I've wanted to do. I'll give you a quick example.
Okay.
I was decided I wanted to go to the Olympics in China. And, you know, getting tickets to the Olympics is very challenging. And so I've just started visualizing it and actually got a picture off the internet of a Chinese man running the hurdles near the Olympic rings on his chest. So I put that on my vision board. And about 30 days later, I was going to give a talk to a multi-level marketing company in Las Vegas. It was about 7,000 people in the audience. And I was backstage, and I was getting ready to put on my microphone to get on to go out and talk. And this Chinese-looking guy walks over toward me, and he says, "Are you Jack Canfield?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Have you ever spoken in China?" I said, "Well, I've spoken in Hong Kong, but not mainland China." And he said, "Well, I'd like to have you come over there. I have three multi-level marketing companies that I am in charge of over there. One is the one you're speaking to today and two others." And he said, "I put on these huge events in China, and I'd love to have you come speak." And I said, "Great, I'd love to do that." I said, "Even more importantly, I'm trying to get tickets to the Olympics that are going on in China. Do you know anyone who could help me do that?" He said, "Well, yes, I do. My brother's on the Chinese Olympic Committee, and I think I could get you tickets to anything you want." Now, that kind of thing starts happening to me more and more and more. And I found that the more I believed in the law of attraction and the more I practiced the things, like I have a book called Jack Canfield's Key to Living the Law of Attraction, which I wrote after I was in The Secret, because I thought there were some things missing in The Secret that needed to be emphasized more. And the more I started doing this, the more those things were happening in my life. I mean, at least once a week, I could give you a story like you just told me about your life where the law of attraction has come into being.
Wow, that's amazing. So interesting. Well, once again, if you're just joining me, I'm talking with Jack Canfield. And Jack, let's talk about your 2010 Success Principles Workshop that you're conducting all over the U.S. I know that you've already been here in my great city of Atlanta. Share with my listeners about that workshop and some of the principles that you are really teaching in those. I know you're getting rave reviews.
Yes, we are. It's my best workshop other than my seven-day training that I do in the summer. If anyone's interested in that, you can go to my website, jackcanfield.com, and check on our summer training, which is August 8th to 14th. But what we do every year is we do a series of one-day workshops in the spring just to expose people to our work and to give them a cheaper alternative than our seven-day training. And we've done them in Dallas and San Francisco and Atlanta, as you said, and Seattle. We were April 10th, and then Boston coming up on May 1st. So what I've been amazed by, Constance, is I thought we'd do these little regional things and people would come locally, but we've had people fly in from the UK, from Hong Kong, from Argentina. When I was doing the one in Atlanta, we had people fly in from Kansas and Boston, Mexico, Canada. It's pretty amazing to me. It's like power of the Internet that people know what's going on, and also Internet radio like the one we're doing right now. And so what we do is I literally help people look at how do you take 100% responsibility for your life? How do you clarify your life purpose? And we take them right through that exercise so that everyone leaves knowing what their life purpose is. And then we look at creating your vision, which we talked about a little bit, you know, the seven areas of your vision, health and fitness and relationships and finance and career and job and so forth. And then we turn that into specific measurable objectives and goals, which is one of the reasons most visions don't become manifest is that people don't nail them down into the how much by when category. And then we teach people how to use visualization. We teach them how to write affirmations correctly so that people leave with that. We have people create accountability partners. One of the big secrets of success that W. Clump Stone taught me was mastermind groups and accountability partners. Most people are not in a mastermind group, which is about 6 to 8 people who meet regularly. Our research now shows that about every 2 weeks you should have a mastermind meeting. It can be by phone. We have people in mastermind groups that are in Australia and San Francisco and Los Angeles. And you know, they get on the phone at a certain time, and they all now with Skype and with
right,
conference calls and so forth, you can really do it cheaply. And then we have people actually create a strategic plan for how you are going to make these goals come true. And we do a really powerful exercise called releasing limiting blocks, where you literally go back to, you think of something you want that you don't have, that you've had trouble manifesting, and then you go back to the earliest time you can remember feeling the same feeling you have when you think about that. And everybody goes back to sometime between the ages of 3 and 11, and they have a major event that they discover where they made a decision that's blocking them, and they can re-decide that decision. I had a guy who actually one of my favorite stories, I had a woman from England who was totally overwhelmed, and she was just working her, you know, butt off way too much. And she called me as a coaching client once, and she said, I want to learn how to be more effective and get more done. And when she told me what she was doing, I said, I think you have the wrong question. I think you need to look at why you're so overcommitted. I mean, you're a workaholic. Turns out, when we went back in time, when she was about 5 years old, there was a recession in England, and her father had said, kind of offhandedly to his her mother over dinner one night, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to feed all the children, you know, because it's so hard to get a job, and we're not going to be able to feed all the children. And she thought, wow, I want to be one of the ones that gets fed, so I better really stand out. So she started, you know, getting A's in all of her classes and going out for all the extracurricular activities at school and so on and so forth, excelling in sports. And when I met her, she was on the board of five companies. She was a consultant. She would have two jobs. I mean, it was amazing. And she was getting married, so she was planning a wedding. And after our work, and she realized that what was driving her and keeping her from really being happy, she resigned from three of the boards. She quit one of her jobs. She still makes, you know, over $250,000 a year and is very, very successful. But, you know, people can go back to those kind of events and really pop something that is stopping them from, you know, having a fulfilling life. And so we do lots of exercises like that. It's an experiential workshop. It's not me talking so much as we're doing on the radio today, but people actually going through these experiences and breaking through to new levels of success.
And so people can go to your website, Jack, and find out when your next workshop will be.
Yeah, they go to two websites. There's one called The Success Principles, that's plural, workshop.com, The Success Principles Workshop.com, or just go to Jack Canfield, J-A-C-K-C-A-N, as in Nelly, F-I-E-L-D.com, and you can just press on the button that says trainings and workshops.
Well, you know, Jack, I read that you get about 20,000 questions per month about success principles and the secret. What's one question that people really want to know the answer to about success principles? What would you say would be the most popular question that you receive about how to become successful?
Well, what you're referring to is we have a free call that any of your listeners can tune into. It's you just go to AskJackCanfield.com, AskJackCanfield.com, and you can type in a question, and then we answer that once a month on a free call. It's the first Wednesday of every month, 10 o'clock California time. And, you know, you'll get registered for the call, and I send you a number to call and the code to get in. And as you said, we've now surpassed over 100,000 questions. Mm. And we've had as many as 20,000 in 1 month. And I think the biggest question we get asked over and over is, if there was only one success principle that you know you would apply, what's the most important success principle? And I always tell people, that's like saying, if you only had one part of your body you could keep, which one would you keep? And you know, you can't operate without your heart and your lungs and your liver and your kidney and so forth. So there is no one magic bullet. There's really a system. And I teach that you have to have to open a lock, like a combination lock, you need all the numbers and you need them in the right order. And that's what my book, The Success Principles, is about, is 64 principles that if you apply even the first 25, what I call the fundamentals, you'll radically change your life. And the promise we make in the book and in our seminars is you can double your income and double your time off in less than 2 years if you really apply the principles. But if I had to boil it down to one thing, I would say it'll be a compound sentence. It would be that decide exactly what you want, believe you can get it, and then start taking action. And most people, they get stuck at the action stage. If you look at the word attraction, law of attraction, the last six letters in the word attraction are a clue because they're A-C-T-I-O-N.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
That's amazing.
And so basically we have to go into action. And I say there's two kind of actions, Constance. One is the obvious actions. Like if you want to be a doctor, you got to study anatomy, physiology, biochemistry. You got to go to medical school. You have to take your licensing exams and so forth. And then you have to go out in there and do your internship and your residency, and then you're a doctor. But there's also what we call inspired actions. As soon as you decide what it is you want to do and you say to the universe, this is what I want, you start visualizing and affirming and believing and doing that, you're going to start getting inspirations. Like, you know, to write the book, Chicken Soup, that was an inspiration that came. And so, because I always wanted to write a best-selling book, and then this opportunity presented itself. But I had to pay attention, and then I had to take action. So let's say your goal is to go to medical school and you're there studying your biology, and all of a sudden you get this inspiration that you should go down the street and go to Mrs. Jones's house because her husband died a month ago, and you know she was kind of a mentor to you when you were a child and so forth, and you haven't seen her in a while. So you bake these cookies and you go down and you knock on her door, and she says, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you, Constance. This is great. Come on in." And so you go in, and she says, "I'd like to introduce you to my nephew. Hey, John, come over here." And she says, "Yeah, this is my nephew. His name's John Perkins, and he's the dean of admissions at the medical school at Georgia State University," or something like that. And you go, "Wow." So law of attraction was telling you, here's an action you need to take. Your logical mind can't put it together, but if you didn't take those cookies down there, you would have missed that opportunity to meet someone who could be critical to you getting into medical school.
That's amazing. So, Jack, people right now who might be really experiencing difficult times because of the economy, they might have been downsized, lost their home. What would you say to those people now who are listening all over the world?
Well, basically, never give up hope. I mean, that's the big thing I see. There's, you know, whenever we get a recession or a depression, we have people go into resignation and hopelessness. There was a woman that interviewed me for a radio show. It was in Atlanta. She was also an African-American woman. And she got a copy of my book before she interviewed me, and the radio, you know, our publisher sent her a copy. And after she looked at it to familiarize herself with the interview, like you've done, she then gave the book to her brother. And her brother had been unemployed for 18 months. He read the book, and he got very excited about it, and within 6 weeks he had a job. So the point is, it's not about the economy. You know, we have like, you know, 12% unemployment in some places, 17 is probably the worst I've heard in certain places. Mm-hmm. But that means 83% of the people in that area are still employed. And so you just want to be one of those people. And how do you do that? By applying all the principles that we've been talking about today. And whether it's the principles in the Law of Attraction book I wrote, or it's the principles in the Success Principles book, all the other people you've had on your show, they're teaching people, these are the things you must do if you want to be successful. The key is to take action, to do what I call the daily disciplines of success. You have to, you know, write down what you're grateful for 17 minutes a day. That sounds like a weird time, but there's some research on that, and when people do it, they start to become more successful. Meditate on that. Meditate, period. Write down your successes. Talk about what you want. Don't talk about how bad it is. In other words, if you talk about how bad it is, you're going to attract more bad. If you talk about the good things in your life, even though there may just be a few, the fact that you're alive, you're breathing, you have a radio, you have a computer, you have electricity, you have running water, mm-hmm. your cat still loves you, your
right.
husband loves you, all those things, if you focus on that, you're going to feel better. If you visualize your goals as achieved, if you read your affirmations, you know, we could go down through the list. Whatever it is that you're experiencing, trust and know that the universe is actually on your side, and you're learning valuable lessons. When you're unemployed, you're learning that you can live on less. You're learning to reach out to friends. You're learning to build community. You're learning that you have perseverance and courage and power inside of you. But you have to mobilize that and put it into action. When you do that, you'll get a job. You'll be employed. And if you know, the other thing is, don't think of yourself only as an employee. Maybe you are going to join a multi-level marketing company and become an independent distributor. Now you've got a business of your own. Maybe you're going to get together with 300 people, start a new business. There was a woman in Kansas, and I read about this in USA Today about a year ago. When the recession hit, you know, she lost her job. And then she noticed that in her neighborhood there was a lot of mortgages being foreclosed upon. And when people would leave these houses, they would basically destroy them. They would, you know, take cabinets out of the walls. But they left everything trashed. The yard was trashed. The inside was garbage everywhere. Nobody cleaned up because, you know, they were mad when they had to leave the home. Well, she called the local banks and said, you know, I'd like to be a cleaning service and help clean up these houses so they're presentable when you go to sell them at auction or whatever you're going to do with them. And so they said, okay, great. And she now has 12 employees and has her own cleaning service because she saw a need that was there and she chose to fill it rather than waiting for someone to hire her. She took initiative and started her own company.
Oh, that's so amazing. Well, Jack, we have maybe about 5 minutes left. Let's talk lastly about serving and leaving a legacy. I know you're really pretty big on that one.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was I think Winston Churchill said, you know, I forget the exact quote, but the idea being that, you know, the life you live the more you give, the life is going to be more fulfilling. And the idea is that we all have a need to be of service to other people, our fellow man. And, you know, I remember in Chicken Soup for the Soul, we had a story once about a woman who was, they were very poor, living in a church, and the minister stood up and said, you know, we have a very poor family in our church, and we want to give them some money and help them a little bit, so if you could put whatever you can in the collection plate today, the money's going to go to them. And this poor family, they only had $2, but they put $1 in the collection plate. And later that day, they learned that the family the minister was talking about was them, and they ended up getting several hundred dollars to be able to buy food with. But here they were, as poor as they were, $2 to their name, they still contributed 50% of what they had to this other family, which turned out to be themselves. It's that level of tithing 10% or making a difference with your time. A lot of unemployed people, one of the things you can do, if you're not employed, go out and volunteer. Don't sit at home and feel bad for yourself. Go out and help others. And when you do that, you start coming from a place of, I have an abundance of time, therefore I can give. And by when you're in that state of abundance, you actually end up achieving more. One of the stories I put in my book, The Success Principles, was about a man named Kenneth Baring. And Kenneth Baring was pretty wealthy. He was almost half a billionaire. I think he was worth about $500 million, living up in Seattle. And he was a part owner of the Seattle Seahawks football team. And he had the private jet and the private boat and all that good stuff. But he was very unhappy. And I met him at a conference, and he had written a book called A Life of Purpose. And he said his life went through four stages. The first stage was stuff. And he said his whole life was about amassing stuff. And so he got the car and the wife and the good house and all of that. And he said he still wasn't happy. So he said, maybe I need more stuff. So he bought more stuff. Still wasn't happy. And then he said, I went through the stage of better stuff. And you know, he bought better house, better boat, better plane. And then he went through a stage called different stuff where he said, maybe I'm buying the wrong things. And he bought the Seattle Seahawks football team with a couple guys. He thought, surely if I own a football team and have box seats and everyone knows I'm in town, I'm going to be happy. Still wasn't happy. And then what happened was one of his friends said, let's go over to Bosnia-Herzegovina and give wheelchairs away to kids who've had their legs blown off by landmines and so forth. So his friend got this jet. They filled it full of 100 wheelchairs. They flew over to Bosnia-Herzegovina, and they started giving out these wheelchairs. And this one little boy, he picked him up. He was 11 years old. He picked him up, put him in a wheelchair, and he started to go away to give another wheelchair to give to another child. The boy wouldn't let go of his leg. He turned around, and through tears and an interpreter, the boy said, please don't leave yet. I want to memorize your face so when we meet again in heaven, I can thank you one more time.
Oh, wow.
And he said at that moment, his heart burst open. He cried. And for the first time in his life, he said, I felt pure joy, pure satisfaction. And he said, I came home, and I started the Kenneth Baring Wheelchair Foundation. I think he's given away now over 40,000 wheelchairs around the world. And he flies to China and Africa and South America and gives away wheelchairs. And now he's giving. He's also building wells in Africa because he realized when he was there, people were dying unnecessarily for lack of clean water. And so he's doing that as well. But he said, now I realize my life really needed to be about service. He said, I've never been happier than when I'm serving. And I find that's true for me, too. I give away 10% of my time a year to free talks, to boys clubs, Girl Scouts, you know, the kids in the inner city schools, the kids in the programs that are, you know, in the alternative schools where they're not doing well academically, prisons, so on and so forth. And so, and I have to tell you, I've spoken in boardrooms. I've spoken to leaders. I talked to the cabinet and the president of the Philippines once. But I'm never happier than when I'm working with people at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, knowing that I'm making a difference that will get them started up that ladder of success. It's probably the most fulfilling work I do.
Wow. Jack, you're so brilliant. You're such a giver, and you're such an inspiration. I just really appreciate you and your service. Share with our listeners once again about your workshops coming up, your website, your coaching services, how people can contact you, et cetera.
Well, we have everything we do. We do our one-day workshops, and there's just one left May 1st in Boston and Seattle. You can check in on that one as well. And we're just doing seven-day trainings. We have a coaching program. If you want to work with an individual Canfield coach by telephone, that's available. All these things are available. We have audio programs, home study courses, books you can read, I've been developing stuff nonstop for about 30 years, and it's all valuable. And every price range of what you can afford, you'll find something that will serve you. Just go to Jack Canfield, that's C-A-N as in Nelly, F-I-E-L-D.com. Or if you want to go to our one-day workshop, there's just one left this year, go to www.thesuccessprinciplesworkshop.com. And there's a phone number there if you want to call. You can call our staff and ask questions. And the website gives you everything you need to know.
Right. So, Jack, how do you stay refreshed and motivated? You're always giving, you're always empowering, you're always touching other people's lives. But every time I've seen you or listened to you, you always seem so fresh, so motivated, still inspired. How do you do that after 30 years?
Well, you know, I'm 65 years old, and most people say
you look great.
Most people say, look, I'm in my early 50s. But, yeah, I do. And, you know, I eat healthy food, eat organic food as much as I can. I exercise regularly. I meditate probably 5 days a week. I like to do it every day, but sometimes you got to catch a plane and get up at 4:30 in the morning and I forget. But and I read voraciously. You know, I've read over 3,000 books. They're all positive, and they're all books on success. I take at least 4 workshops a year. My wife and I just came back from a 7-day couples workshop we did in Mexico. I have a meditation teacher. I'm going to a workshop with her for 4 days and 2 weeks. And, you know, I study NLP, the Sedona method, whatever. So I'm constantly renewing myself through reading, through meditation and prayer, through going to seminars. And also I surround myself with really positive people. Just came back again 2 days ago from being in Hawaii for 5 days with John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. With Stuart Emery, who used to be the head of Landmark Training, and, you know, 4 other people all in this work, staying in a house in Hawaii. We just got together and said, let's go over and have some fun for a week. So if you do that, you're going to stay positive.
Thank you. Jack, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on, sharing with our listeners. I know that their lives would never be the same again after listening to what you shared with us today.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
God bless you.
Yeah, back at you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That was just a great interview. I'm just so grateful for Jack Canfield. I'm going to encourage you to listen to this interview with Jack again and again and again until it really gets down in your subconscious or in your spirit, and just take those principles that he shared and begin to implement them in your life. Well, this is Constance Arnold from Atlanta, Georgia, saying that I am on the air every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And for my West Coast listeners, that's 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I want to encourage you to keep listening, share this information with your friends. And remember, when you change what you think and you change what you believe, you will begin to experience the miraculous miracles of God in your life. God bless you and have a great week.
Thanks for joining us today on Think, Believe, and Manifest. We'll be back next week with another great show. For more information, go to FulfillingYourPurpose.com.